Tonight we're going to continue our study in Genesis chapter 26. So let's turn to 26 verse 12. Well, it always makes me nervous when Brett does things behind my back. All right, here is the text for tonight. And Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year a hundredfold. The Lord blessed him. And the man became rich and gained more and more until he became very wealthy. He had possessions of flocks and herds and many servants, so that the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped and filled with earth all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father. And Abimelech said to Isaac, "Go away from us, for you are much mightier than we." So Isaac departed from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. And Isaac dug again the wells of water that had been dug in the days of Abraham his father, which the Philistines had stopped after the death of Abraham. And he gave them the names that his father had given them. But when Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found there a well of spring water, the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, "The water is ours." So he called the name of the well Esek, because they contended with him. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over that also, and he called its name Sitna. And he moved from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. So he called its name Rehovot, saying, "For now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." From there he went to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him in the same night and said, "I am the God of Abraham, your father. Fear not, for I am with you, and I will bless you and multiply your offspring for my servant Abram's sake." So he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants dug a well. When Abimelech went to him from Gerar and Ahuzat, his advisor, and Phicol, his commander of his army, Isaac said to them, "Why have you come to me, seeing that you hate me and have sent me away from you?" They said, "We see plainly that the Lord has been with you." So we said, "Let there be a sworn pact between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm. Just as we have not touched you and have done to you nothing but good and have sent you away in peace, you are now the blessed of the Lord." So he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. In the morning they rose early and exchanged oaths. And Isaac sent them on their way, and they departed from him in peace. That same day Isaac's servants came and told him about the well that they had dug, and said to him, "We have found water." He called it Sheva. Therefore the name of the city is called Beersheba to this day. You know the saying, count your blessings. If I asked you, how many blessings of the Lord do you identify in this text? How many do you see? I think all in all, you can certainly identify two blessings, one at the very beginning and one at the very end of the text. At the beginning of the text, we are even told the Lord blessed Isaac. How did he bless him? Isaac became a very, very, very wealthy man. The Lord blessed him with material wealth. And at the end of this story, another vista opens, and another blessing of God is being bestowed. What is that blessing? It's peace. Peace, even with those who have acted like enemies, as Isaac himself says to King Abimelech, you have hated me. You drove me away from your kingdom, and now you come to me. What do you want? God makes peace. Proverbs 16:7 says, when a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. That would be a good commentary on this particular blessing. Now, I want you to see once again how this text is crafted. We have the beginning and we have the end. We have one blessing of wealth and another blessing of peace. And in between these two, what do you have? You have this bewildering back and forth of wells of water being dug and then cast up with dirt, dug again, and other wells are also being dug and fought over and quarreled over until the very end of this text, in fact. And in these tests, in these quarrels that Isaac is experiencing in his life, you see a man who is responding to God's blessings. So the text is framed by the blessings of God. And in between these blessings, we're seeing a picture of how Isaac begins to walk by faith, begins to live by God's promise of blessing. He knows that he is God's. He knows that the blessing of Abram has passed on to him, and he has already received this promise as early as verses 2 through 5 in this chapter. And you remember, at that time, when God pronounced his blessing with full weight, a full serving of God's blessing on Isaac, Isaac went down to Gerar during a famine, and he cut a very sorry figure because he was afraid of the people. And so he lied about his wife. That is how he responded to God's initial blessing. Now we are beginning to see a different Isaac, a different person who has learned a thing or two about living by faith, living on the basis of God's presence in his life. Now, here we are, God's material blessing, this is how the story begins to unfold, carries its own mortgage. It produces two problems of its own. His material wealth that continues to grow earns him the envy and the hatred of the Philistines, his neighbors. And it requires, this is another problem, it requires real estate. In particular, life-sustaining water in an arid land where a well of water means life, quite literally, life. So, he is wealthy, people envy and hate him, and at the same time, he needs places to sustain his people and his cattle, which is abundant. And so the narrative unfolds. Go away from us, for you are much mightier than we are. Abimelech, the king, has seen enough of watching Isaac prosper in his land, and he begins to feel envious. And the flip side of envy is what? What is the flip side of envy? Fear. The flip side of envy is fear that someone else has something that you have not, yes, but it is also that you might not have enough because you want that something. So there is envy. He begins to feel envy, and that's the flip side of fear. What if this trend continues? This is how Abimelech would think, I believe. Will this man not crowd us out and evict us from our own property? And on the back of such brooding thoughts, the king extradites Isaac to go to a different place. You go away from us. But here now is the first glimpse of the growing godly quality of Isaac, namely his confidence in God's promise. For when the king said, "You are much mightier than we are," he wasn't kidding. And he was not using exaggeration. He was mightier. He had a reason to say this. God's blessing had made Isaac a man to be reckoned with. A man that in the given situation you could not get around. Even a king couldn't. And he was not the kind of man that you wanted to mess with on account of his power. He could have replied, "Well, then try to expel me. You're a king, aren't you? And by the way, Abimelech, if you say, and you really mean it, don't you? If you say that I'm mightier than I, you should not be talking like this." Because it might be detrimental for you and your people. But Isaac departs from that place. We read in verse 17, he departed from there. He was in a position of strength. He was in a position of power. And he moved to the side and yielded to the king. He is rejected, though he gave them no offense except for being blessed of God. But he responds as though he had just heard Jesus. As though he had just heard Jesus' sermon on the mount about turning the other cheek. When someone strikes you on one cheek, turn to him the other also. But you see, he is not responding to Abimelech or the circumstances of his life. It's not that he was ignorant of them, but he doesn't respond to the circumstances or to Abimelech who says these things and acts in this way. He responds to God's promise. He knows that God is with him and blesses him as he had said, and therefore he doesn't need to retaliate or return evil for evil. Nothing would have been easier than to get nasty and dig in his heels. And he shows true greatness, not needing to prove himself. That's his first victory in his life, so far as we see it. And in our never-ending struggle for autonomy, we make laws and we break laws, hoping to gain some advantage, hoping to get ahead somehow. We want to be in control of our lives, so we fight and we stand up for ourselves, conquer the enemy. But Isaac has come to see that God has blessed him, and he is free from the need to defend himself. That's such a hard lesson to learn. When I feel that I'm being attacked, my natural tendency is to go to, maybe not survival mode, but to attack mode. Go back. You know, control the situation by becoming nasty. Control the situation by retaliating evil for evil. And this is so difficult to learn, to sit still, knowing that God defends you. And that's what Isaac does. He knows that God is his shield. He also knows what he has done and what he hasn't done. That is his shield. God knows. And he received the promise of God, like the words from the cross. It is finished. It's in the books. No one can take it away. No one can change it. No one can alter it. It is finished. His life is under the banner of grace, and because it is under the banner of grace, it shall remain so. He's beginning to learn this lesson, hence this first victory in his life. And as I said, it's a hard lesson to learn for us, but it's a lesson that God teaches us too, all of us. Brothers and sisters, this is one thing that you always need to remember. If you call yourself a Christian, this is what you believe. This is what you must say. Things have been fixed forever between heaven and earth, between God and me. Things are fixed. Things are settled. They cannot be undone. Unless you believe in a different brand of Christianity, that's not my brand. I believe that grace is final. Once applied, it will not be withdrawn. God is sovereign. Salvation is of the Lord. And when God lays his hand on his people, he will never remove it, but it will remain on them, whether in discipline or in grace that takes the form, a different form of encouragement and strengthening. But all the same, God's hand remains on you. That will never change. Things have been fixed forever between heaven and us. And the ledger has been cut up in pieces and thrown away. God doesn't keep a ledger with you. And everything we need, everything you need has already been granted. We already possess it in Christ. Does it always feel like this? Of course not. That would take away all the fun, wouldn't it? But the struggle is here for a reason. But things have been settled. And this conviction, that's a gospel conviction. This conviction of the gospel must be formed in us as it began to be formed in Isaac, as you see him interact with his opponents who drive him away. All right, now a second sample and a second victory as seen in the ongoing feud over these watering holes. There's a series of incidences where even old water holes that Abraham used to use are being dug up again, and then new water holes are being dug, and they fight over them and contest possession. Now, water was an absolutely necessary commodity in a dry land. It was not negotiable, especially when you have so much cattle and people to take care of. So this was essential for his life and the survival of the clan. This was not a small thing. Therefore, now Isaac, I mean, you would justify him. He changes tactics. Apply a little more pressure. Get a little more resolute about all this. After all, he had the manpower to do it. Instead, this is how this sequence unfolds. He digs one well and moves on when the Philistines contest the property. He digs another well and he moves on again, because they won't stop raising strife over the wells. He just walks away from the contest. And the names of the wells, contention and enmity, imagining you having two children and naming them contention and enmity, the name of the wells tell the story. Still, Isaac remains calm. Isaac was a man of peace. He is sowing peace by yielding. Another lesson hard to learn, because in this life, yielding the way Isaac does here, just let him have it, walk away, is often interpreted, and not by other people, by me and by you, by all of us, it's interpreted as weakness and failure, when it actually is the opposite. It's a sign of true strength. Here's the second victory of Isaac. He remains calm. He is sowing peace by yielding remarkable strength. Don't you think so? Many would consider it weakness. But what would Jesus Christ say? Who, when he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten. He continued entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. And that's what Isaac does. You want this well that we have dug? You can have it. My case rests with God. I entrust myself to God. It's a hard thing to do, but we see some of the very best of Jesus Christ coming to the fore in this man whom we know as Isaac. He did not need to search. He did not need to fight for something that he already had by God's promise. The Spirit of Christ accounts for this. The Spirit of Christ was resting on and working in him. This is why he obtains this second victory. And remember, you too stand by grace, and you have no need to look for something to make you happy or to look for something to make you secure. Under every worldly rock and every worldly tree, God's love in Christ is enough, and it will be. And then the third time, Isaac digs a well. Here comes the breakthrough. The breakthrough. He moved and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. So he called its name Rehovot, meaning broadnesses, plural, broad places. For now the Lord has made room for us. His trust, which showed in patience and forbearance, is finally rewarded. And he knows the address where to take his thanksgiving. He knows that this is not due to his policies. It's due to God who blesses him. And so he owes this to the Lord. And the name of the well paints a beautiful picture. Open spaces, broadness, an open, wide open landscape with high skies, a few white clouds sprinkled high up there, the way that you will see it in Texas, I would imagine. And you breathe deeply because you breathe the broad space, the broadness of God's promise. And that's what Abram breathed. That's what he is saying. I've seen an end to all perfection, but God's commandment is exceedingly broad. Broad spaces. And on the heels of Isaac's confession, God himself responds now by rehearsing his promise in Beersheba. Fear not, for I am with you and will bless you. That's an echo of verses 2 through 5. The same words were said at the beginning when Isaac faltered. And here Isaac built an altar. He called on the name of the Lord who had blessed him so. However, this appearance of God at Beersheba was also the preparation for the final scene of our text. The final scene that contains a good deal of irony. God says, "Fear not, Isaac." That is ironic because that was his problem. That was his weakness when he went down to Gerar, and he was afraid. He was afraid, and so he lied about his wife. The irony is that God now brings Abimelech back into his life. And that's a reversal, because Isaac came to Abimelech with fear and trembling, being afraid of what the people might do to him on account of his wife. Now Abimelech, of whom he used to be afraid, he comes to Isaac, and no doubt God brings him to make a point. He comes to Isaac in a similar frame of mind, maybe not with fear and trembling, but with considerable concern and respect for this man, seeking a truce, seeking a non-aggression pact, a covenant. But what is most astounding is that God's word, God's very own word, "I will be with you and I will bless you," is finally found on the lips of Isaac's enemy, the king. He says in his address to Isaac, "We see plainly that the Lord has been with you." That's what God had promised. "I will be with you." And a little later, Abimelech says, "You are now blessed of the Lord." That's what God said too. "I will be with you and I will bless you." Out of the mouth of his enemies, the people that he used to be afraid of. It's a reversal, a great reversal, and it couches the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. "This is my son in whom I am well pleased," the father pronounced at his baptism. God was pleased with Jesus Christ. And because God was pleased with Jesus Christ, pleased with all of his ways, in every way, even to the end when he hung on the cross, he was pleased with his sacrifice. He made even his enemies to be at peace with him. We were his enemies by wicked works, by unbelief, hardness of heart, all those things that make us hateful. We were his enemies by wicked works. We couldn't get him to leave us quickly enough. "Get away from us. You are way too invasive, Jesus. Get away from me. You are way too powerful. If only half of what you say about yourself is true." And we are now coming to him, helpless, with fear and trembling. The Spirit guides us with a spirit of supplication to make peace, desire conditions of peace with Jesus, and he gladly obliges us. Do you see this in the text? First, the first retort is, "Hey, why are you coming here to me? You've treated me like an enemy. You hate me, and I know it. You sent me away." Or when they say, "Yeah, but we know that God is with you and God has blessed you now. We know this." He doesn't argue with them. Abimelech could have been sent away. Instead, Isaac is willing. He's quick to say, "If you want peace, I'll make peace." And so they have a feast. They have a ceremony. They swear an oath never again to hurt each other. They have a beautiful little party. And so we too have come to Jesus desiring conditions of peace, and Jesus has gladly granted this peace because this is what he came to give us in the first place. Far greater than Isaac, he is the Prince of Peace. And we too have a meal, like Isaac and Abimelech. We have a meal to celebrate the peace that we have in him, the Lord's Supper. And far better than the truce that they strike in this story, the supper confirms far more than to say, "Well, now listen to me, you're not going to hurt me, will you? We will not attack each other, but we will have peace to that extent. No, the Lord's Supper assures us that we are now like Isaac, of whom God said, I will be with you and I will bless you. No less than this. Brennan Manning in the Ragamuffin Gospel writes, when I get honest, I admit that I'm a bundle of paradoxes. I believe and I also doubt. I hope and I get discouraged. I love and I hate. I feel bad about feeling good. I feel guilty about not feeling guilty. I am trusting and I am suspicious. I am honest and I still play games. But this is the way it is with all of us. Like Isaac, we must learn that God's grace, God's faithfulness and love are far, far greater than we will ever understand. And if you put a limit on any of these, then you know that everything collapses. Don't put a limit on God's faithfulness. Don't put a limit on God's love, because in limiting God's love, you also limit the extent to which God's love can be applied to you. And the story of Isaac so far to this point shows God's faithfulness in blessing him. And it shows Isaac's response after failure, initial failure. And may our life be the same, namely the chronicle of God's grace, God's faithfulness meeting our failures, so that we learn to trust him more. And when we realize this, we make progress in sanctification, as does Isaac, who images Jesus Christ. And the conclusion of the matter is this. We have seen that God grants a two-pronged blessing, wealth, great wealth, and also peace, even with his enemies. These two blessings, in essence, are the blessings that God has for all of his people. Maybe you never thought of it this way, but I can assure you that this is theologically sound. These two blessings are now in full possession of Jesus Christ on the right hand of the Father. He earned them by conquest, by the victory that he has won. He is wealthy because not only this world and all that is in it, but with him are the treasures of God's wisdom, unsearchable treasures. He has all power, all wisdom. He rules supreme, and God has granted him this as well, that his enemies seek his peace and obtain it. The nations, we are included. And these two blessings, wealth and peace, they will be yours as well. For we will go on forever in a world that knows no deterioration, sickness, death, in which even the poorest are rich beyond our wildest imagination. Because God's bounty will be our treasure. God in Jesus will open his treasure chest and dish out the blessings. But what is at the heart of that world that is coming is not so much that everything will be in overabundance and we will be able to enjoy it properly to the glory of God. It's peace. That shalom that we all still seek. There will be peace beyond knowing, because he will be with you, and he will bless you as only he can. And wealth and peace, therefore, his kingdom is forever. Amen. Do you have any questions or comments about the messages?